Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 76. Ben Flanagan of Aspect Radio. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
Ben, how are you doing today?
Ben, I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good, man. So we're on the final, final few days before The Force Awakens comes out. So what better thing to talk about than the movie that The Force Awakens is a sequel to, which is Return of the Jedi, released in 1983, the year of my birth. I was planning, you and I have kind of traded a few comments in the past about exactly how well Return of the Jedi holds up. I think it's kind of the movie that was everybody's favorite when they were a kid, it seems like. And it was certainly mine. It was probably the first bit of Star Wars I'd ever seen. I think I remember my friend turning on Sci-Fi Channel when there was a when there's a marathon or something on, and I saw the speeder bike chase and thought, hey, this is pretty cool. But I was kind of always of the opinion that, well, a lot of the stuff that people hate about the prequels starts in Return of the Jedi. So I was ready to go into this, and I feel like you've kind of scoffed at that idea in the past, and I was just about ready to go into this conversation kind of with, you know, standing on solid ground with that being my viewpoint. But after finishing the movie last night, even it being the special edition on Blu-ray, which has all the CGI changes, I think I'm going to actually be backing off of that statement. I think there are still certain things in here that I think point to what we ended up getting. But I'll just go ahead and start and say Return of the Jedi is freaking awesome. You with me on that?
Yeah. I've been waiting on you.
I mean, I make it clear, I've never said that it's not awesome.
Well, you've denigrated it in a pretty severe way in that you ranked Revenge of the Sith ahead of it for a long time, and I just wonder now if you're ready to face the world and backtrack on that. Because, we've rewatched Revenge of the Sith lately, too, and you've just watched Return of the Jedi, one of the original trilogy, and I personally just cannot comprehend the concept of ranking any of the prequel movies ahead of the old trilogy. Do you stand by that ranking?
Well, I didn't actually rewatch Revenge of the Sith for these retrospectives. Everybody else, Graham and Craig handled that. But I have seen that one a number of times, and I don't think I can in good conscience say that it is a better movie than this, but I still stand by that I had that opinion at one time. I'm not ashamed to say that, because I do think they're two movies that try such different things, and I feel like there is a tragedy and that actually it successfully attains in Revenge of the Sith despite its performance issues, despite its, you know, digital cinematography, and despite, you know, some big leaps in logic, I feel like there are still huge dramatic beats in that movie that totally work for me. And I do feel like there's several action sequences in that movie that are stellar. And I will say that that is where this movie might be lacking a little bit in terms of, really, once you get past the first act of this movie, which nothing that would come after could ever possibly compete with. Even the best parts of the prequels, which, you know, whether that's the standoff between Obi-Wan and Anakin in Revenge of the Sith, or whether that's the lightsaber duel at the end of Phantom Menace, or whether that's the end credits of Attack of the Clones, nothing good from any of those is going to hold a candle to the opening of Return of the Jedi. Basically, until they get to the Rebel base, Return of the Jedi is just this perfect adventure movie. But I do think after that, it kind of flattens out a little bit, and it never quite gets back to that. There are a few, the space battles and the way they composite and shoot those space battles at the end of this movie are phenomenal, but I feel like the lightsaber fight isn't nearly as great as the one in Empire Strikes Back, and the war on Endor is fun, but it's not as dynamic as certain things that I like in Revenge of the Sith. So I don't want to harp on that the whole episode, but to defend myself from several years ago, and again, you know, I might rewatch Revenge of the Sith and the fallout of Force Awakens, and I might have renewed fire. But but right now I got to say that, you know, nothing in the prequels has the charm of this. Nothing in the prequels has the performance of this. Even though I feel like Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher both are, I don't think they're bringing their A game here, and I'm not sure what that is.
Let me start there in terms of like gripes we have with Jedi before we get into all the good stuff, of which there is a ton for me.
Yeah,
you mentioned some of it, but yeah, I mean, if there's anything that falls short in this movie, it's that the trilogy's best character in the minds of many, Han Solo, he has so little to do in this movie outside of getting unfrozen during the first act that you mentioned. And
he's got to open a door. That's what he has to do.
Yeah, and so yeah, like there's just not a lot of Han Solo. I mean, he's not even flying the Millennium Falcon in this movie, you know. And like you mentioned, the space battles towards the end are just beautiful, and are just, there's so much filling the frame, you know, and the speed of it all is just glorious, and I love it, but you kind of wish Han Solo was up there, you know, instead of down on Endor, and that whole sequence for me is really fun, like you said, but I mean, it's a little odd seeing Ewoks throwing rocks at, you know, these evil galactic space marine stormtroopers. The goons just falling on the ground, you know.
Well, real quick on that, that was something that, you know, you hear a lot when people talk about Return of the Jedi is, oh, the Ewoks throw rocks at the stormtroopers, and that's
right.
All it takes. I watched for that this time, and really there's only, I feel like, one or two moments where it shows an Ewok throwing a rock, and a stormtrooper falls over, but usually what happens is that an Ewok throws a rock, the stormtrooper falls over, and then a bunch of Ewoks run up to the stormtrooper and stab him with like sticks and pointed rocks. So I feel like, well, yeah, these guys are just using the rocks to knock the guys over, and then they're just stabbing them in like the soft parts of their armor. And I
think
they're
setting their slings to stun, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you get hit in the head with a rock, it may knock you over. It
it's
might not
silly.
Kill you.
It's silly. It, you know,
but
it's,
if a little tiny bear stabs you, you're going to die.
Well, but even like, there's that moment when Han's, what I think are the best Han Solo moments are his interactions with the Ewoks and C-3PO once they've been captured by the Ewoks, and you see the Ewoks stick the spear in Han Solo's face, and he just throws it out of the way like it's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like he's not intimidated until, you know, until Luke and everybody, you know, he convinces Han and everybody to sort of just go with it, you know, and use C-3PO to their advantage, and that was really fun. But yeah, you know, Han and Leia, you know, after basically Empire was their movie, you know, with the romance that they built and just like the crackling dialogue the two of them have in that, A, that's hard to top, you know, and B, I think that the focus, you know, rightly shifted back to Luke in this movie. Obviously, he's the namesake, right, for this. And, well, I guess there's an argument to be made for multiple meanings. But, you know, you mentioned that you didn't care, you didn't love the lightsaber fight, where I think it's really good. I think it's really well staged. But, I mean, it's just so secondary to what's really important in that sequence, where Luke just doesn't really even seem to be, his head doesn't really seem to be in the fighting as much as it does eluding Darth Vader and trying to convince him that there's still good in you. Find the goodness in you so that we can get out of the Empire and leave the Emperor and destroy, you know, finish this revolution and let you become the man that you used to be, even though Vader thinks he's far gone. I just think that stuff's really beautifully told. And I love all of the stuff with the Emperor and sort of the three-way interplay between those actors. I think it's just really fantastically staged and written and really beautifully told. But I mean, let's start really with, if we're going to talk about the good stuff, with what you mentioned, the Jabba's Palace opening act, which is just so good. And it's just up there with anything in this entire trilogy. And it's really the stuff that I remember the most from when I watched it as a kid. It's obviously the stuff that burned into my brain for obvious reasons, you know, whether it's just the sight of Jabba.
It's
just unbelievably designed and realized creature, whether it's, you know, Salacious B, Crumb, my favorite villain in the Star Wars saga, or the Rancor, or Leia in the bikini, and Jabba's disgusting tongue. And, you know, all of his little henchmen are just so fantastic, and the creature designs are just out of this world. And, I mean, unfreezing Han, and, I mean, I'm jumping all over the place, but so much happens here. But, I mean, I just love, honestly, the way it opens. The fact that we open this thing, and we start the end of this journey with C-3PO and R2-D2 walking in the desert and walking up to that enormous wall with that thing that I... popping out of the wall and letting them into the building. And it's just such a wonderful, mysterious way to kick things off and reintroduce these characters. And again, just to harp on the technical aspects of this, the production design, and again, the creature effects, the sound effects, again, Ben Burtt just absolutely killing it in this movie. I mean, it just really sets the stage for something special.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, like you said, the production design, I think that it almost opens similar, the same way that Star Wars opened, you know, where we open with a Star Destroyer and a scene of the Empire, and then we go down to the planet and, you know, a desert, well, the same planet, Tatooine, and you've got the two droids by themselves in the desert for a little bit. So it does seem to, there's a number of ways that this, it's almost kind of like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in many ways, mirroring Raiders of the Lost Ark. I feel like this one kind of mirrors the beats of Star Wars, which I think is a nice touch, especially since the second movie was such a departure. And just all the stuff on the barge, it's such it's when you say, I don't know, like a pirate movie set in outer space, like, this is what you would see in your head. You know, it's just so iconic. Like you said,
they're walking the plank.
Yeah, exactly. It's got a gangplank. And going back with the Rancor, it's all of these great things about movies, you know, with sword and sandals and pirate movies and monster movies and all this stuff. And it's all crammed into this one, you know, act of this movie. And it's just brimming with imagination and creativity. And character stakes, and you know, every little reveal is wonderful. Leia revealing herself to be that bounty hunter is wonderful, and it's all fantastic. But a slight tease of the prequels when we get a cheap death for a cool villain, you know, the Boba Fett Darth Maul treatment.
well, at least they waited until the last movie to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's a little bit of a setup, and some of the stuff with Han being blind is unfortunately goofy for a character that, you know, was such an integral dramatic part of the second movie, and so cool in that movie. It kind of hurts to see him reduced to comedy at times here. Like I said, it seems like once this first act goes by, the movie, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, the movie stops becoming about people doing things, and it becomes more about people kind of working through things emotionally. Basically Luke's journey in this is to figure out a way not to fight, and it's very much a movie about that. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't work so well. There's, again, a kind of shades of the prequels. There's a lot more static, you know, reverse shot scenes of conversations in this, where people are talking about mythology and Yoda is explaining all this stuff. I feel like there's so much universe building and explanation and kind of tidying up that has to be done here that the middle of the movie sags for me. The end of the movie, it kind of gets back to being, you know, a roller coaster. But did you feel any of that? It was something I was afraid of with the Yoda scenes in Empire Strikes Back, and they didn't sag for me at all because it felt so mysterious and kind of universal. But here I feel like it gets so specific with these scenes between Luke and Yoda and Luke and Vader and Luke and Leia, where they're just kind of in cool environments, but they're just kind of talking to one another. Did any of that, you know, stand out to you at all?
It stood out in a good way for me. I love that scene where he goes back to the Dagobah system and sees, you know, Yoda and spends his final moments with him, and they build up the obviously Leia being the other hope, you know, for good in the Force. And I think that honestly, that's kind of a promise from Empire in this movie, where they again, going back to Leia and Han not having as much to do, where they don't necessarily pay off the Leia aspect of it as much as they kind of, you know, I mean, that's such a great moment when Obi-Wan and Yoda are left behind in the previous movie, and Yoda says,
yeah,
you know, no, there is another, you know, it's just such a beautiful shot, and it's just like, whoa, what's going to happen? Who is it? Oh, and yeah, that's something that I think doesn't really get explored all that well outside of, you know, Leia later in the film sort of sensing, you know, Luke's presence, and, you know, that's just kind of what you get. But no, that, I love that stuff, and I really, really like the scene with Luke and Obi-Wan after he leaves Yoda's crib, and it's just really, to me, really good acting and writing between Mark Hamill and Alec Guinness, a great final scene between those two. And yeah, and then, you know, once they get to Endor, I think it's, again, I just go back to the fun aspect of it. And that's what this movie never loses sight of. It's just rollicking entertainment. And the slow stuff to me is just so well written that it doesn't, I never really feel the slowness of it. I'm so engaged with the story and the things that, again, you mentioned the sort of emotional breakthroughs and lessons that Luke has to learn, that it, none of it really bothers me. I mean, I don't see it as a weakness.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of does to me. And you mentioned the writing, that Lee Brackett did work on Empire Strikes Back, and Lawrence Kasdan did, of course, the screenplay there too, and came back for this. But I do feel like there's a certain spark that's missing, and a certain humor that's not there. I feel like the physical humor is there, but the dialogue doesn't crackle as much. And you get this, I guess, there's a scene where Han Solo, when they get to Endor, is telling C-3PO to ask the Ewoks a bunch of questions. And he just kind of, like, keeps, like, bugging him. And then he's like, and then C-3PO turns to actually do it. And he's like, well, hurry up, I don't have all day.
Yeah.
It just fell so flat for me.
No, I love that moment. Because C-3PO he does one last double take. It's just like, why would that robot do one last double take after he's been such a dick to him, you know? Like, even the robot's annoyed by Han Solo's dickishness.
Yeah, but I guess it doesn't feel totally earned. It what it feels like to me is there's those lines in The Phantom Menace where it's like the Trade Federation guys, and they're like talking to each other, and they're like, what are you, brain dead? And it just seems like that kind of third grade writing where it's like, well, we need something funny, so let's just have this guy be kind of a jerk. And that's it. It doesn't, I don't know. It's something that I feel like you don't see in Empire Strikes Back. It's like the barbs that he and Leia are trading are meaningful, and the crap that he's getting C-3PO is kind of so rapid fire that, I don't know, it just kind of stood out to me. And it was, again, it felt like it, I feel like there's a vague sense here that Lucas had Empire on his hands and kind of set a couple of things in motion that he didn't quite have totally filled out, and just kind of started taking pen to paper. And I think there are many more drafts of a screenplay here than of, you know, the prequels, but I do feel like it kind of has that same problem where, you know, let's do one more punch up here, and maybe Han should be on the Millennium Falcon flying around, and that way you have, you know, Leia on the planet and Luke on the Death Star and Han in the Millennium Falcon. You have, you know, so there's a big reunion at the end. You know, maybe there's different ways we could use these characters. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a full polish, and it's hard because they're coming off of Empire Strikes Back, which I've said before is kind of one of the greatest movies ever made, and is so propulsive, and everybody's in the right place at the right time, and Kirshner is setting up the camera in such dynamic ways. There are no dialogue scenes in that movie that, unless you're counting like Luke and Yoda talking, which, you know, there's so much going on there because of Yoda, but also visually, but also they're so limited in terms of the set. I feel like Kirshner would have never just done a shot, reverse shot, cut to a wide shot, cut back, you know, let alone like four scenes like that, rapid fire, which again, I feel like we get in the middle of this movie. I don't know. I'll back off here in a second with the negativity, but I don't know. These are things that I just have to kind of get off my chest because, again, I'm seeing red flags for the prequels. I'm seeing red flags for a guy that is a little bit more interested in building a universe than he is and tying up loose ends that he kind of maybe regrets bringing up than he is interested in making an all-time great movie.
Well, I don't know about the loose ends that he shouldn't have, you know, that he shouldn't have introduced that he has to tie up, that he's forced. Yeah, I don't know. Like, none of that really sticks out to me. And going back to the Han 3PO thing, I like that it builds up 3PO and gives him a hero's moment where, in contrast to Han, who is usually the guy who rises to the occasion and saves the day, and in this protocol droid that he has bickered with and hated for the past couple of movies is in position to save his ass in that situation, you know, and even
but
if
he, already
the,
has.
He walks on say,
I mean,
say again
he already has saved his ass. I mean, there's that's not like a new moment, like everything.
Right. Well, I just mean like I'm going back to like the first scene when
oh, right.
Again, when the Ewoks, again, they don't pose the biggest threat necessarily to these people, but I just love when, you know, they're surrounded and then all of a sudden up rises C-3PO like the Undertaker and the Ewoks just immediately start that, thing that they're saying and he becomes their god. And I love the moment that it gives C-3PO. I think Anthony Daniels is fantastic.
It provides
great comic relief, and it's probably overall his best overall performance because they give him a ton to do, and he rises to the occasion, and it's really good. And since we're on the Ewoks, let's go ahead and knock this out. I love the Ewoks. I don't understand people who hate them because I mean it seems like, you know, you have your reasons for hate, you know, not hating necessarily, but. But you have your gripes with this movie that do not necessarily pertain to the Ewoks, whereas the Ewoks have become synonymous for a lot of people as being sort of symbolic as the reason Return of the Jedi falls short as opposed to the other movies in this trilogy. I couldn't disagree more. I think they're great characters. They're funny. They're cute. Ben Burtt's Ewokese language that he creates is phenomenal, and the people performing it just knock it out, and I love sort of the interaction that they have with these characters that we've come to know and love for the first couple of movies, and you know, people talk about this weird symbolism and commentary related to like new technology versus the old world that they sort of represent as the Empire sort of tries to stake its claim on Endor and they revolt against them with their just, you know, old school weaponry and things like that. I don't know if that necessarily works or if really that's what Lucas was trying to do, but I just find them charming and I don't personally understand the vitriol. Yes, they're small, furry, cute creatures that distract some people, I guess, but for me, they totally work.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I love the Ewoks. I always have. As a kid, I thought they were cute, and as an adult, I think that, I don't know, I think he makes them properly murderous, you know? I mean, they're willing to eat, you know, they want to eat people, basically, and they want to, they kill stormtroopers, like, prison shanking them, you know? And I feel like that's great, you know? I like that. I feel like that's a really 80s fantasy movie thing, you know, where you have these seemingly cute things, but then they're also extremely dangerous. And you know, there's the story about he wanted it to be Wookiees, but then, well, if Chewbacca can figure out technology, then it wouldn't make any sense for Wookiees to be all that, you know, low tech. And I don't think Wookiees would have actually worked as well. I think it helps that they're small and that they're vulnerable and that there's a, you know, a bunch of them.
Yeah, they're underdogs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
they're a great parallel to the rebellion.
Yeah, I like that, and I like the setting. I think it's a cool, different setting. It sets this movie apart. This is the green movie, you know, between his green lightsaber and as much of it that takes place in on Endor. That's always the color that I associate with this movie. I love the Ewoks. I'm with you. I don't understand the hate. People say you can say that it's a transparent attempt to make toys, I guess, but I don't remember that many people playing with Ewok toys when I was a kid. And again, they're not exclusively for children. And again, not only do they make them murderous, they also have that heart, you know, heart wrenching moment where the one, it's like a Saving Private Ryan moment, you know, where the one Ewok dies in battle and the other one is like, come on, let's go. And dude, he's dead.
It's easily the most devastating moment in the trilogy, and like the most emotionally devastating moment for me.
For me,
like,
very,
even,
very
even bigger than Luke, I am your father. You know,
very similar to me, but I think for me a bigger moment is Chewie, you know, howling as Han is put in carbonite. Like that, I know, but in the moment, like the pain in his voice, it is the same thing of like a dog responding to tragedy, you know, that kind of, that very special sort of sadness that only movies can capture so well. I'm with you. That's a heart-wrenching moment, and overall I think the Ewoks are great, and I think that they're one of the things that keeps that Endor stuff moving for me. I feel like if it wasn't for them, it would be about Han Solo and Princess Leia performed by actors that aren't all there
well,
trying to open a door.
You mentioned the speeder stuff, too, though. I mean, that's
great.
God, just, you look back on it, and you could probably, I don't know, be picky in terms of, like, the effects compared to what they look like today, but I don't buy that at all.
It feels like a rush
to me. I mean, it's just like they're blasting through that forest, and I mean, I feel it any time one of those stormtroopers, you know, crashes into a tree. And that's just one of the most exciting sequences throughout the entire trilogy. I love it. And like you said, the scenery is just so cool. Like, they shot that, like, in the Redwoods, right, in California, I think.
Yeah, I would imagine. Yeah.
And yeah, they really took advantage.
For each plate shot for the, you know, the actual perspective shot of them going through the trees, they just got, like, guys on Steadicams walking through the forest very slowly and still. And then they sped that up, and it looks so awesome, and it's so fast, and it's you can't take your eyes off the screen, and the sound design is incredible, and there's no music, and it's so well laid out. Like, I feel like if it was the pod race, I feel like if you asked me to map out the pod race, I wouldn't be able to tell you where it's going, who's going what, you know, what's going on. But with that speeder bike chase, because they had to be so meticulous in planning it, they shot it so intuitively that I can tell you kind of the beats of every little moment of, you know, Luke jumping from the one thing to the other, and then, you know, jumping off and swiping the front of that thing until it goes crazy. It's amazing. And, you know, again, it was one of those first things that I saw from Star Wars when I was a kid. So I've known about this for years, but then the other night when we were watching it, it was like I caught myself holding my breath, because it's still so intense and it's so fast. It's great.
Yeah, and I mean, if you want to jump into the space stuff, you know, when Luke finally turns himself in and you know, has it out and has the big moment with Daddy and the Emperor, and then, you know, obviously cross cut. But that was like, this was like the first time I really noticed in a movie like of this scale, like how many different things were being cross-cut at once, right? So you've got this big space battle of them trying to destroy the Death Star again, which is like their, you know, one last shred of hope, and you've got Luke and Vader and the Emperor happening, and then you've got them trying to open the door on Endor, right? And that's, like, it's just really, I just remember noticing that and being really impressed by that as a kid. You know, like, these days, I mean, you watch a movie like this, like a Lord of the Rings movie, and there's, like, six different things going on, and it's obviously influenced by what something like Jedi was able to do successfully, in my opinion. And, you know, maybe one of those Jedi sequences could have been dropped, you know, because, you know, the stakes, comparatively, the stakes might not be quite as high as what's happening, you know, in the Star Destroyer, or what's happening, you know, in the Millennium Falcon trying to destroy the Death Star. Or I guess, are they on the Death Star are they in a Star Destroyer when Luke and Vader and the Emperor are all hanging out?
I thought they were on the Death Star.
Okay.
Because it shows the Emperor getting to the Death Star.
That's right.
With his badass red Imperial guards earlier in the movie.
Yeah, I love that moment when one of the Imperial commanders is like, Lord Vader, the Emperor demands the impossible. You know, and he's like, well, you can tell him that when he gets here.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the Emperor's on his way. You know, and, it's in this, right, when it cuts to that dude in the background, he's like choking and dying, and the next guy up sees it.
Oh, that's Empire.
Okay, that's Empire. Okay.
Yeah, when the underlings keep just dropping like flies.
Yeah. Vader just doesn't care, man. I mean,
no.
It's the Empire.
He doesn't in that movie. I feel like, again, if I'm going to bring the hate, I don't know. I think that the end with the unmasking of Vader and all that stuff is so great, and I don't know. I guess it's pretty well earned, but there is a part of me that's like, this is where it started. You know, this is where Darth Vader ceased to be one of the great movie villains and became this kind of tragic hero.
That's the point of the arc.
Yeah, but I don't know, like. I kind of like my villains to be villains, and he's such a badass in Empire that it's just kind of tough to see this big guy be kind of turned into this mope.
Then it started when he revealed that he was his father in Empire.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you kind of get...
I mean, I guess you're right. That movie sucks.
Yeah, because, I mean, at that point, you kind of get the feeling that, okay, well, now that we know this, I guess, you know, in retrospect, obviously, you know, having seen Jedi and everything and what Luke tries to do with Vader, I mean, at that point, that's when the seed is planted for Luke to eventually turn him good, right?
Is it? Is it? Or is it just the moment where, because Empire, it seems like the setup is all that Luke could become Vader and, you know, he sees himself
right.
in the cave and in the mask and all that stuff. So it seems more like here's this ultimate force of evil that I could see myself becoming.
Well, but also,
when he finds out he's his dad, then that's the moment where, oh God, then I really could become this guy.
He learns Anakin is good, right? I mean, Vader killed Anakin, and so Anakin is good, and so Kenobi is basically telling him.
But do you really think Lucas knew that Vader and Anakin were the same person in Star Wars?
I don't know what Lucas knew.
Part of me thinks that maybe not. Maybe he was making this all up as he went, and that's why so much of this movie is two people sitting around. You have Obi-Wan saying, well, from a certain point of view, this is what happened. No, it's not what happened. You're just being a weird old ghost. You know, it just seems like
he knew everything. I think he was sketching Sebulba back then, man.
He was designing the Pepsi can that Sebulba was going to be on. I don't know. I mean,
that's a really weird gripe that you have, because the whole point.
It's not a gripe because the movie totally works, as a redemption story. I'm just saying, from a personal standpoint, I feel like Empire doesn't necessarily point to a redemption story for Vader. I think what it points to potentially is Luke facing off with himself, with what he could become.
But how great is the message, though, that instead of killing evil, you try to reverse it. I think that's great. And so, again, going back to the title meaning of this movie, so is Luke the Jedi who's returning, or is it Vader who is, returning from the dark side?
I always saw it as a plural, like the Jedi in like as a movement are returning because they have somebody that can train them now.
I see.
And there's two of them. I mean, there's two potential Jedi at the end of this. There's only one there's Leia is not trained. Yeah, I mean, she has the potential to be a Jedi. And
yeah, they never really hammered that home, though. Like I said, that's kind of a thing that isn't necessarily
I don't know. We'll see. But, that it's not a gripe. It's just a personal thing where, again, I think I've said this on past podcasts, that I'm not a huge Star Wars nerd, but I'm a pretty big Empire Strikes Back nerd. So every other movie in the Star Wars universe has to serve that movie in my mind, and this one doesn't 100%. And that's okay.
You're a pro wrestling nerd. Does it upset you when like major villains turn good?
I don't like you bringing this kind of stuff, outing me on the podcast like this.
You've already admitted to liking the prequels.
It's true. How much farther can I fall? That's different because it's linear. Because there's not only one WrestleMania. It's a constant thing that has to keep moving. But yeah, there's certain wrestlers that just should always be bad guys and shouldn't turn good.
Can you think of an example where you were disappointed when a bad guy wrestler turned good? Because he should always be bad.
God, dude. You're not only out. No, I can totally think of some examples, and that's the bad thing. You're not just outing me. You're also just like outing, my shameful encyclopedic knowledge. I think there's plenty of times where Triple H, who is such a great bad guy, has had to, because he's like been the biggest name on the roster, has had to function as the top good guy. The same goes for Brock Lesnar in his original run. He was such a, it happened again recently. He's such a powerhouse and
we're really losing people.
But I remember
Hollywood Hogan or Ric Flair or something like that, or the Undertaker.
Yeah, Ric Flair, another great example is he's so popular that people, he's so iconic, he's so popular that people love to cheer him, but he's much better as a bad guy than he is a hero. Same thing with Darth Vader. He's the icon of this franchise, and you all you have to do is show somebody the Darth Vader mask and they know what you're talking about. And that immediately necessitates a face turn, because he's the flagship of the franchise. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's the best storytelling decision.
I think this goes back to Star Wars and whether or not you believe that Vader turning good or Vader being Anakin was part of the, was happening from the get-go, And you don't believe that.
I didn't say I don't believe it. I'm just wondering. I think that there's narrative arc here. There's some narrative disconnect here that makes me think that, maybe he didn't know that. And maybe he didn't know that Leia was going to be the other one, when he wrote certain, I don't know. Well, now, yeah. I mean, that's totally confirmed in that movie. So that's a hard thing to kind of say. I certainly don't think he thought that the whole Leia being also a Jedi or also, a Skywalker. I think that it's clear, very clear that that was not set up in the first one at all. He had no idea that's where it was going. I think that was invented entirely in Empire, and it bears it out if you look at Star Wars, because then the way that Vader deals with Leia, he knows she's his daughter, and he doesn't react at all, but he totally, no, he doesn't even react to Luke. The only person Vader reacts to in the movie in Star Wars is Obi-Wan, as somebody he used to know. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I think at one point, I think that was it. I think Anakin was an old friend, of Obi-Wan's, and Vader, a different person, killed him, and that pissed off Obi-Wan, and that gives Luke a reason to really hate Vader. I think that's as simple as it was, and I'm not saying that's how it should have been. I'm just saying that I think that's how, if you look at the saga, that's where it is. And again, looking at the prequels, if the worst thing about the prequels is that it demystifies this awesome villain, then, hey, you got to point back to Return of the Jedi as the start of that demystification. Because, again, in Empire, even if he's his father, that doesn't mean that he has to be redeemed. That just means that he is the ultimate bad guy for Luke, because he's not just the bad guy, he's also the potential that Luke could fall to.
No, I love the way it is, and I love the fact that he is good again, but in a way it's too late for him, obviously, because he's mortally wounded, but I go back to just the message of it, that the best way to defeat evil is just to be good and, you know, try to reverse evil into good if that is possible. You know, in some cases it's with like the Emperor. I mean, it's not like Luke is sitting there like, I see good in you, Emperor. But
with Vader,
it's possible. And it's just like to see the good in people and to try to resurrect that into their entire being, right? And I think that's a beautiful aspect of the story, and I appreciate it, because I mean, yeah, Vader is like the big badass, and I did a list this week for work about like our favorite movies and heroes and villains and blah blah blah, and when it came to like favorite villain, I mean, the obvious answer, and I mean, if you're making like the greatest villains of all time list, the obvious
Salacious
answer for a lot of
Crumb.
People, yeah, that, well, that's mine, but the obvious answer for a lot of people is Darth Vader, right? Like he's the biggest evil badass in the galaxy and in movie history. But you reach that point in that mode of thinking where it's like, wait, no, but I mean, he's actually a good guy. One of my colleagues, William Thornton, actually picked Darth Vader as his favorite hero of the saga. So it's complicated, but I guess he can be both, because I think that is as earned a character arc as there is in movie history. I love it.
Yeah, and it's totally set up in the prequel trilogy. Which you embrace as part of this hero's journey.
Right. Well, I mean, you talk about something that just like retroactively destroys that, right? In that mythology, you mentioned before, like demystifying the character, the Anakin that they portray in those prequel movies is just a worthless, sniveling punk.
Yeah, he doesn't at all match the guy that Obi-Wan describes in Star Wars or in Return of the Jedi, or the guy that Sebastian Shaw, you know, seems to be playing in the last moments of this movie.
Well, remind me real quick, if in Phantom Menace, because I haven't watched the entirety of Phantom Menace in a long time, are there any moments where young Anakin Jake Lloyd foreshadows like being Vader? Like, are there any like, I mean, I'm probably asking for way too much in finding character moments in that movie at all?
Or performance subtlety?
Yeah, is there anything that you can recall in that movie?
No, I mean, in general, you know, and I think it's in the prequels that they establish that, you know, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering and all that stuff. So
right.
if you're saying that a penchant for anger is part of, you know, the seeds that created Darth Vader, there's actually hardly any of that in Phantom Menace. Is something Matt and I talked about, which is he doesn't seem all that bothered by anything. He doesn't seem all that angry. I mean, that's the one thing you can say about Hayden Christensen is that, well, at least he plays angry. It's not a particularly attractive type of anger, but at least he's angry. And we don't know who he's angry at. He may be angry at George Lucas. He may be at his agent or his hairstylist, but he's definitely angry.
Yeah, he's the embodiment of those, like, mythologized, simplistic directions that George Lucas gives his actor, right?
Sure.
Actor,
yep.
Right, where he's like, play it angry, you know, like
mad and fast. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Be mad. Be madder. Just do it again. Be madder. You know, yep. And it's like, oh,
but he didn't even tell Jake Lloyd that.
Ran with that. Say again.
Yeah. Well, he did. I mean, going back to your question, I don't think he told Jake Lloyd that at all. I don't know what he was telling Jake Lloyd, because the kid is just being. It seems like he's just being himself, and that's not his fault. And I know, you know, I don't ever want to seem like I'm picking on this little kid that you know, was put in this position. But yeah, I mean, I don't.
Could have been any kid.
Yeah, it could have been any kid. And again, I just the stuff that is set up specifically by Obi-Wan in Star Wars and Return of the Jedi. Well, A, the stuff that's set up in Star Wars is contradicted by Return of the Jedi, and that's when you get the whole, well, in my point of view, it was like this, which is kind of a big, you know, I don't know, I think that's kind of a big reach there. But also, none of it, if you combine both of them, none of them are what you see in Return of the, in Phantom Menace in terms of him being a great pilot and all this stuff. I feel like that's none of that is really there. And that's something that I don't understand why Lucas didn't go back and just watch his own movies one more time before.
That teaser poster, though.
Yeah, it's a cool poster. That's about, yeah. That's, I mean, if that had been an actual image in the movie, it may have, you know, it may have done more visual storytelling than any of the rest of that movie did.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, going back to Jedi.
Sure, please.
Like I love the Luke and Vader stuff, and I think Ian McDiarmid is fantastic as the Emperor, and his dialogue is just so good, and the stuff that, you know, trying to wean Luke over to the dark side is just is great. I love the little catty moment between the two of them where Luke is like, "Your weakness is your confidence," or something, and he's like, "Yours is your faith and your friends." You know, he just like turns with this like girlfriend comeback to Luke. It's just really terrific, but no, like I don't know, man. Like, there's so much about this movie. Like, I watched the Blu-ray special edition, and I mean, he really like did everything that he could to just taint that movie. You know, like, and there are just big moments that he ruins. You know, like unless you remember what happened very clearly, it's painful to think that people are living with that version as the version of Return of the Jedi, you know, the only one that they know, you know, including the, I mean, there are a few, but like the, when obviously the Emperor is giving Luke the business via the electricity powers or whatever it is, Vader obviously goes and picks the Emperor up. And as he's doing that, screams, "No!" You know, the way that he does at the end of Revenge of the Sith. Like, I can't believe that he would do that. I mean, like, why did we need that? Why, like, it's almost like we go back to the visual storytelling that, you know, obviously left George Lucas's powers in the prequels. But, I mean, you had this moment of, you know, again, your gripe with this is that there's less actual action and there's more tell than show, right? And then he turns a total moment of action, you know, a character action moment into something that we obviously needed to be told. And I just don't understand that decision.
Yeah. It doesn't make a ton of sense. It didn't bother me as much as a bunch of the other changes. I do have a quick question on the, when they're flying around in the guts of the Death Star, is that all new? Is that all digital? Because that kind of looked good. I don't know. There was, because it was going by so fast. I had a hard time telling whether it was just you know, good models flying by super fast with a bunch of motion blur on it, or if it was new CGI stuff that they added.
I wondered the same thing, because like you said, it's moving so fast, and it's mainly during all that space battle stuff. You know.
Yeah, it adds to the. The stuff that's going on outside, you know, with the speed and with the objects in relation to one another. But I mean, obviously it's tough to pick out the worst kind of edition, like, you know, special edition stuff. There's the big stuff, like, I don't even know if we need to say it out loud, the new song in Jabba's Palace. But then there's the big stuff like that. But then there's also the just painfully unnecessary stuff, like this wide shot of Jabba's palace where it's clearly, you know, a plate and a miniature from the original film, and then they add in the foreground, like kind of in the middle ground, they add this like monster eating something and like farting and burping.
Yes.
What? Why?
Yeah.
Like, even if you made this movie now, you wouldn't decide to put that there.
Yeah, why? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in Jabba's palace. You know, the extra Boba Fett shots, the you know, instead of the puppet singing in the club, this you know, the song that you mentioned, it's a CG version, and then the whatever beaver thing that goes to the foreground and screams. Like, it's bizarre. And you know, the stuff that the worst sin here is replacing Anakin with Hayden Christensen Anakin, you know, in the hologram. That's just like the biggest middle finger to this original trilogy that I can think of. I mean, and you know, when I first saw Jedi, I loved the original music during the celebration on Endor. For whatever reason, like, that just really irked me that they would change that music. That, like, when I watched it again this time, the music didn't, the new music itself didn't bug me as much, but still the principle of replacing it did bug me.
Well,
and
they it's just such a, it seems like such a lazy edit. It's like a pan, it's like a tilt up, and then it fades to a bunch of crazy CGI shots, and then it fades back to the exact same shot.
Well,
and
just to note, those CGI shots you're talking about, you see all these cities throughout the galaxy, right, who are,
right,
are celebrating the fall of the Empire, and one of those is it Naboo, or is it, like, I can't remember, is it the Gungan, wherever the Gungan.
Yeah, Naboo.
You hear someone yell, Weesa Free.
The man you hear yelling that is standing on top of a Naboo tower in the foreground, and he's just, he's saying Weesa Free.
Yeah, it's not a joke. Like, this isn't an SNL digital short. Like, this is Star Wars. This is it.
Yeah, and again, if you had seen just this trilogy, that would make zero sense. The Christensen thing makes zero sense, and that makes zero sense.
It's like, does Luke see Anakin there, and he's just like, wait, who's that? Who are you, dude?
Yeah, yeah.
You're not
my dad.
Those
are the other two guys. Yeah,
you're
not my dad. Yeah, and again, the physics of the Jedi Force death or whatever, I don't quite get either, because if he truly turned good again at the end, then he should have still looked like himself as an old man, not what he looked like when he died, quote-unquote died as Anakin.
Why wasn't it Ewan McGregor, you know? Like,
well, because Obi-Wan died as an old man. The theory is, I think, to justify Hayden Christensen,
the real Anakin died.
He died when he agreed to become Vader, or maybe he died, but even if he died when he got the armor, then he would be, like, bald and all burned up and missing a leg. So, I don't know. I'm sure there's a really smart explanation, but it's, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt, but I can't say that that doesn't mean it belongs, you know, that doesn't mean.
But if you're that actor, how pissed off are you?
Oh man, I'd be pissed. Well, imagine what if they had digitally replaced his actual, like, in armor, you know, when Luke takes off his helmet and they, like, put the top half of Hayden Christensen's head. there and, like, re-recorded the audio. Oh man, I kind of wish they had done that just so I could see the reaction.
Yeah, or reshot any Alec Guinness hologram scene like we have on the Dagobah system with Ewan McGregor. I think they should have just done that.
That could have worked. He's pretty great. Honestly, his performance as Obi-Wan might be better than Alec Guinness's, because Alec Guinness was. I talked about this with your friend Franco. Alec Guinness is basically the performance Alec Guinness gives is the performance of a Star Wars skeptic, of somebody that thinks he's too cool for Star Wars. And Ewan McGregor just kind of goes for it.
When he's trying to act like Alec Guinness from the previous movies.
But somehow he out Guinness's Guinness.
No, stop it. That's ridiculous.
What I'm saying is Bridge on the River Kwai remake, Ewan McGregor, and Jai Courtney. all right. So anything else before we wrap it up?
Well, just, like, this has felt like a hate party on your part,
I love this movie. I love it. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's because I've got all these thoughts bottled
attack
up.
Attack of the Clowns.
Oh, man. Did you write that down? No. I love this movie. And again, it's all the questions I have are questions. They're not actual. The only criticism I'll give and say that, look, this isn't The Empire Strikes Back. It's not as dynamic, and the middle section doesn't move as quickly. as I'd like. But the opening section of Star Wars doesn't move, and that's not necessarily that's not what makes a great Star Wars movie. It's not constant motion. It's kind of this kind of feeling that something grand is going on the edge of the screen, combined with fun space adventure, and that you totally get that here. And yeah, I definitely don't want to leave the final note being anything negative. This is a great movie, and I feel guilty for ever suggesting that it's not.
Yeah, or suggesting that Vader shouldn't have been Luke's father, and you would have written that differently. But
I may have. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm a better writer than anybody.
You
I'm
basically just said you were.
He wouldn't have made Empire a worse movie. It may have improved the series.
So is it Richard Marquand?
Marquand.
Marquand. Okay, I've never knew how to pronounce it. I think he does a fantastic job. I think the movie's beautiful. He deserves a ton of credit for again managing obviously the story and the different sequences, simultaneous sequences at once down the stretch. I think that the space battle stuff and just like the visual design of everything. I had heard that Lucas, when it came to like really heavy duty special effects stuff, that Lucas had to step in and sort of like ghost direct some of that and like give him a hand, as it were. And if that's the case, then he deserves a lot of credit for executing that in a big way, because I mean the action in this movie is just phenomenal. That's where I would like, this is just for me just a great rollicking space adventure and just a really fun way to close this book on this story. And you know, you mentioned at the top of this that Jedi for a lot of young people growing up is their favorite Star Wars movie, and for me that was true and has been true for a long time. It was only until I rewatched Empire Strikes Back in the past few weeks that I came to the conclusion, like many, that it's the best movie in the trilogy and in the entire franchise. And I'm comfortable with that now. There's just so much going on in Empire, and it's just so strong that it's just hard to deny that. But rewatching Jedi this week too reinforced those strong feelings that I had for it. And there could be one day where I watch that again or I'm just thinking about these movies again, and I think of all the stuff I love about Return of the Jedi, and I say, you know what, this is still my favorite of all these movies, because to me it's just that good. But weirdly, the first Star Wars movie, Star Wars, ranks last out of the three for me. Like, it's an easy call.
Yeah, I think the purity and the imagination of that still ranks it higher, but I don't begrudge anybody. If this is your Star Wars, I'm fine with that, and I think that it's, and in some ways it's that, if this makes any sense, it's the most Star Wars. You know, it has it has the most kind of, you know, mix of big moments and environments and action that I think labels it as that's fine. But I think for me personally, I think just from a filmmaking standpoint, from a history standpoint, from a plot propulsion standpoint, I think the original still ranks a little bit higher than this one.
Well, that's fine. And you know what I just love about it is that movie, before Empire got carried away and realized like what it had in Han Solo, you know, the original was all about Luke, right, and telling his story. And I love that about Jedi, is that the focus, they refocus it back on Luke and finish his journey and really give him so many opportunities to really shine as the hero of the story, whether it's at Jabba's palace or it's there with Vader and turning Vader good again. I think Mark Hamill is so just like strangely one of the unsung heroes of this trilogy, right? And is like strangely underrated as Luke Skywalker. And I think he's at his best in this movie. And not to speculate or anything, but I'm really gritting my teeth in terms of like my anticipation to see like what his role is in this new movie that's coming out. And I just can't wait to see how it plays out, because I think he's so talented. Obviously, he's done great work since then as a voice actor and elsewhere. But he to me is just so synonymous with this franchise and is just such a great ambassador for fans and somebody who really has a great sense of humor about it. I can't wait to see how he winds up back in this world.
So you didn't hear that in this new one, that was supposed to be a joke there. Yeah, I agree. I think this is his best performance from the three, and he has, and I think something that Marquand probably brought to the table, being more of a character-based kind of director, is he wasn't afraid to do the stillness, to bring the stillness that, that may be sitting funny with me after Empire, but I don't think he was not afraid of having these kind of quiet scenes, and that's what he was good at, and I think that's what I think Mark Hamill probably appreciated that, because it's so internal for him, and I think he does a really great job with these moments, and I think Mark Juan was probably most interested in that, which is maybe why, Harrison Ford gets a little less attention. But also, you have to give Mark Hamill so much credit for doing so much of his acting, and especially these last two movies, against a Yoda puppet, or David Prowse in the Vader suit, and Ian McDiarmid and all his makeup. He didn't have a bunch of other normal people to act alongside, unlike Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher. So I definitely think he should get a ton of credit. And I agree with you that he's like the guiding presence in this movie. And in terms of in his arc as coming from a boy to this kind of petulant guy in the second movie to this kind of quiet, assured leader in this movie, it's really a fantastic arc. And nothing anybody can ever do or add to the series will take away from that great linear character arc in these three original movies.
Do you dig the green lightsaber?
Heck yeah, man. It's awesome. It's fantastic. And when it pops out of R2-D2 on that barge, and there's that one shot where like the wind is like whipping everybody's hair and Luke is just like flailing around. It's awesome.
He's just like slashing folks in that
yeah.
scene.
Well, yeah, you said earlier he's interested in like redeeming, bad people, his father, and finding the good in people. I guess he's not too interested in finding the good in anybody else in the world because he is just killing fools.
For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com. and aspectradioshow.com.
All right, man. Well, yeah. So, I guess I'm looking forward to this new movie. If I have to admit it, I'm anticipating The Force
could
Awakens.
Be good. Yeah, could
yeah,
be good.
It may be a big deal. I don't know.
I may see. In the Heart of the Sea again.
Yeah. Total side thing, maybe a show for the future. This year saw the release of movies by Robert Zemeckis, Ron Howard, and Steven Spielberg, and nobody saw any of them, and nobody cared about any of them. And that's, that's worth noting.
And that was the trio who is rumored to make the prequels, right?
Exactly. So Lucas, in terms of just, career-wise, probably made the right decision in doing the prequels himself.
Yeah, because they're freaking nobodies now.